Welcome to Gracious Words. Gracious Words is taken from the weekly women's Bible study taught by Cheryl Broderson at Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.
We behold your glory, God, in the face of Christ. It shows us who you are.
God was calling Jacob back to Bethel, back to the place where he met God and received his promises. But this journey also meant an uncertain reunion with his brother Esau, and where we see God's faithfulness to Jacob prevail. And now, here is part one of Cheryl's message, titled, Back to Bethel.
So I'm going to take you back to the 60s real quick, 1960s, to a pastor's home, to what it was like to be Pastor Chuck's youngest daughter in the 1960s. So let me tell you this. Saturday nights were my favorite night. Not my favorite day, but my favorite night of the week. I played hard all week long. I remember my mom, sometimes I would come in and she'd say, "You smell like a puppy dog." And that was my nature because I played so hard. Saturday was the day that my mother cleaned the house. And so she tried to get rid of all of us. So either my father would take us to the beach or, you know, we had to play outside. No one was allowed in the house on Saturday till mother was finished. On Saturday, she changed all the bedding. All the bedding got changed. Brand clean sheets. You would come in and the house smelled so fresh till I brought my puppy dog scent in. I might be on a long bike ride with friends. One of our favorite things to do was to take pieces of cardboard and slide down ice plant hillsides. I love to climb trees. I love to run. I helped the boys next door make underground forts. That was my Saturdays. Then Saturday night dinner would be at 5 o'clock. Wherever we were, my dad had this special whistle, which meant, and we could hear it no matter where we were, meant come running home for dinner. And it was like this. Let me see if I can do it. Never mind. But my dad would do that whistle and we knew it was come home now. If we didn't respond to that, then he did this whistle that went do, 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 do. And you better get home. That was like your last chance. You better get home. Now, Saturday nights was also very exciting because it was the night that my dad made dinner. Now, my mom made dinner Monday through Friday nights. That was her responsibility. Sunday afternoons, we got to go out for the church actually paid for the pastor's lunch at whatever restaurant we chose. And my dad was very, very careful about what restaurant he chose because you were paying for it. That was a provision in his contract with Calvary when they hired him because they couldn't pay him enough for four children. So they said, but we'll pay your Sunday dinner. So that was the only time during the week we got to go out to dinner. Okay, enough about that. Back to my dad. He made dinner Saturday nights. And it was so great because when dad made dinners, we didn't have to have vegetables. It was the only night of the week there were no vegetables. I was like, yes, it's dad's night. And there was his secret sauce. No matter what he made, it had Chuck Smith's secret sauce. And I want to tell you something about his secret sauce. Every secret sauce contained ketchup, just for the record. And it was water and ketchup, or it was hot sauce and ketchup, you know, La Victoria and ketchup. But every single sauce contained ketchup. And you never knew what dad was going to make, unfortunately, because it usually had to do with whatever somebody in the church had given us that week. It could be swordfish a la ketchup. It could be abalone steaks a la ketchup. It could be venison a la ketchup. So even though I liked those dinners, I was suspect. I was suspect, especially the elk dinner. That was not happy. My dad always did something experimental. Now, Saturday night was my big bath night. Now, I took baths. I just want you to know. Puppy dog took baths Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, but this was the big one. This was the big bath because mom was not going to allow any dirty child back in those clean sheets. This was the night I washed my hair. You see, back in the 60s, we washed our hair only once a week. Once a week. And we didn't blow dry it because they hadn't quite been perfected yet. Most of them burned out. So most people, or you had the bonnet hair dryer. Remember the bonnet hair dryer that had a hose? Most of you are like, was that the dark ages? Yes. We rode our dinosaurs to the bonnet hair dryers. So there were bonnets. You wear these bonnets in the hair dryer, but I was too young for the bonnet. But I would use something called luster cream. That was my shampoo, and it was almost solid. So you would unscrew the jar, and you had to be at least 7 before you could wash your own hair. And you would take a little, you know, take your fingers and just a little swipe of luster cream, wipe it and do this. And you know what? This is going to come as a shock to so many of you, but we didn't even know there was such a thing as conditioner. We didn't even know. I mean, what you did is you just took a comb and you had to comb out your hair after your bath to get all the tangles out. And so after my bath, my hair was washed, my mom would spend about 30 minutes getting every single tangle out of my hair. And then she would take the rags, because we had these rags that were made out of old sheets, and she would do my hair in rag curls every single Saturday night. Because you know what? Sunday was a coming. The next morning was Sunday. And all this was in anticipation of Sunday morning going into the house of God. And I got to wear fresh, clean pajamas because we'd have one pair of pajamas to wear during the whole week. And then Saturday night, my fresh pajamas. And I still remember the feeling of climbing into bed with fresh hair, fresh pajamas in those fresh sheets and feeling so clean, so loved, and so excited about Sunday morning and Sunday school and going to church. So excited. I'm going to tell you one other secret that my dad didn't know. Sundays on the way to church was the only time during the week that I was allowed to chew gum. Dad didn't know it. My dad was very against gum. Gum and cigarettes, mortal sins. But my mom would pass us all out a piece of gum and we could chew it in the car. And then she would pass the Kleenex around just about a block from the church so we would all spit it out before Dad could see. And then she'd throw that Kleenex away. So Dad didn't know that we were all in the gum chewing habits, especially on a Sunday morning. I mean, that might have been really bad. But there's nothing like a clean start. Nothing at all like a clean start. Because all of us, during our lives and during the week, we pick up dirt and germs and dust. Why? Because germs, dirt, and dust are everywhere. There is no escape. In the same way, we get spiritually grimy. We pick up various pollutants just from living in this world. We don't do it intentionally, like, hey, I'd like that virus. I'd like that germ. We don't want them. But they just happen. It's life on earth. Maybe you remember the exchange between Jesus and Peter in John chapter 13. That's where Jesus, knowing that his time had come, knowing that God had put all things under his authority, he got up from dinner and he took a towel and he filled up a basin with water and he began to go from disciple to disciple, washing their feet. And when he came to Peter, Peter said, "Not so, Lord. I will never allow you to wash my feet." And Jesus said, "Peter, if I don't wash your feet, you can have nothing to do with me." Then Peter said, and this is so Peter, isn't it? "Lord, then not only my feet, but my whole body." And the Lord said, "Peter, You are already clean through the word which I have spoken to you. He who is cleansed only needs his feet cleansed. You see, we need regular cleansings. We just need times to get those pollutants out of us that we have unintentionally picked up in this world. As believers, we pick up unknown spiritual pathogens. We pick up fears. Do you ever have like, where did I get that fear? I don't remember having that fear before. I used to know them all by name. Where did Grumpy come in? You know, we pick up these fears. We pick up hostilities. All of a sudden, we don't like someone or, you know, they don't like us. We pick up enemies, wrong priorities, bad habits. We just pick them up without realizing it, unintentionally. And because of this, we need to make regular forays to the house of God for cleansing, refocusing, remembering, renewal, and redirection. Jacob had picked up quite a few spiritual pathogens in the 21 years and even previously before his time at Bethel. It was at Bethel where he first encountered God, Genesis chapter 28. It was at Bethel where he first had the promises of God applied to his life, given to him by God himself. It was at Bethel that Jacob had made a covenant with that same God. But since that time, Jacob had married two wives. He had fathered 11 sons, one daughter, and had another child on the way. He had become a wealthy and successful man. And during that time, God had kept his promises to Jacob. He had prospered Jacob wherever he went. He had protected Jacob. And he had even brought Jacob safely back to the land of promise. However, during this journey, this 21 years, Jacob and his family had picked up some unhealthy fears, hostilities, enemies, habits, and idols. God was calling Jacob and his family back to Bethel, and this was a call to cleansing, a call to new priorities, a call to remembering God's promises and faithfulness, a call to renewal of God's promises, and a call to redirection for Jacob and Jacob's sons' lives. In Genesis 35:1, God said, "Arise, go up to Bethel and dwell there and make an altar there to God, who appeared to you when you fled from the face of Esau, your brother." Go back to that place where you first encountered me. First, directly, face to face, where you first heard my promises. You first met me. You first knew that I wanted a covenant with you, where you came into covenant with me. Why? Because Jacob had picked up fear. No doubt the experience of leaving Laban was traumatic. Jacob was vulnerable. He had wives and servants and livestock and children. And Laban was angry and aggressive. Laban was not someone you wanted to cross. And Laban had pursued Jacob and caught up with him. And it was only God's intervention, the fear of God, that kept Laban from harming Jacob and taking back all that Jacob had acquired, from taking back Jacob's wives and Jacob's livestock and Jacob's children. Have you ever noticed that sometimes the fear doesn't hit you when the event is happening? It hits you afterwards. Any of you ever have that? Where, you know, the car swerves towards you and you're just like, huh. And you avert the danger, but afterwards you realize how close you came to it. And you're like shaking, like, hi, I almost died 5 minutes ago. You know, and you just find yourself shaking, or, you know, someone yells at you, you know, at the market, this has happened to me. They just start yelling at you. And at the time you're just like, I'm sorry you're having a problem. God bless you. Have a great day. May you be saved. If you want counseling, I know a place. And you're fine. And then you get in the car and you're like, I've had that happen so much. When I was in college, there was this man, we didn't call it stalking them. We didn't know what stalking was. But there was this guy who would just show up every place I was. If I was at the beach, there he was. If I was at church, there he was. If I went to the market, there he was. And he'd be like, hi, Cheryl. And I was so dense, I was like, gosh, that's weird how that guy has the same schedule as me. And he's kind of strange, but oh, that's interesting. Until he showed up at my college. And I was at UCI and I came out of a class and he's there and he's standing. He's like, hi, Cheryl, thus says the Lord, you will be my wife, really loudly in front of all these people I had been sharing Jesus with and telling them, no, being a Christian is not weird at all. And there he is. And I'm just like, what in the world are you doing here? And he grabbed my arm and he said, you're going to be my wife. And I was saying, let go of my arm. Let go of my arm. And then I had this tall guy. He wasn't a Christian. His name was Jay. I was sharing Jesus with him. And I worked with him at a shoe store. And he was like, what can I do? What can I do? Now, let me tell you this. Jay was a nice guy. He was probably about 6 feet tall and 120 pounds. It was not much Jay could do. And this guy was big. And I said to him, Jay, just go get campus police. I was so calm. Get campus police. Go get campus police. The guy still got my arm. Go get campus police right now. And now there's a crowd around me. You know, they're all like, and he's going, thus says the Lord. And you know, you're just like, this is so humiliating. But he's so strong, I can't get my arm loosed. And the next thing I know, here at campus police, and they've got their whistle and they're running towards me. And you know, he sees them and he takes off running. And I got to my car and I locked the doors and I said, God, thank you. Thank you for saving me. I get home and the minute I walk through the back gate of our house and around and I saw my dog, I fell apart. I started sobbing convulsively. I fell on my knees. I couldn't move. I was going, ah, ah. I guess because I felt safe and there's my dog like, you'll beat him up, right? And my mom, she's upstairs, she's like, what's that racket? What are you doing? You know, what's wrong with you? Ah, ah. You know, like the neighbors, we do have neighbors. And I come running in the house and she looks at me and she's like, what's wrong? What happened? And I tell her and she's like, give me a minute. She runs in, she calls my dad. My dad rushes home. There's more to that story, but that's another day. I just want to tell you that the fear hit me afterwards. Not at the moment that it happened, when he had my arm, I was like, the Lord and campus security will deal with you. And then when I saw my dog, it was when it hit me so hard. Sometimes that's how fear is, isn't it? And I, until that day, I wasn't afraid of men or people that showed up at markets and places that I was. But after that, it was like I was on high alert. I found this fear and this sense of vulnerability entered into my life. Now, Jacob has no sooner left the land of promise when he hears his brother is on his way with 400 men. Why would Esau come with 400 men if his intentions were friendly or good? I think his intention was to drive Jacob out of the land, to say no. And he was bringing a show of force. And this word strikes fear into Jacob. To make matters worse, Jacob has wrestled all night with a heavenly personage, and his hip is disjointed. He's in tremendous pain. Walking is agony. But we read about his encounter with Esau in Genesis 33. Perhaps Jacob, when God said he would take care of it, perhaps Jacob hoped that Esau would not find him, that God would divinely hide Jacob in his company, or that Esau would be distracted and turned back, or that Esau would be divinely defeated or weakened as he was. It's like, Lord, why do I have to have the hip out of joint? Don't you think you should have given the disjointed hip to Esau? Isn't that just the way of God's Lord? Why are my enemies so strong? Why do I have to be the weak one? Did Jacob expect a positive reception? Jacob begins to bow before his brother once, twice, three times, four times, five, six, seven. He's apologizing. With every bow, he's apologizing. You see, Jacob had been the one in the wrong. Jacob deserved that type of reception. You know, it's one thing to get together with someone, like, oh, we're going to get together. When they're the one who's done you wrong, you could say, you know what? My heart is clean. I forgive you. But you've got the advantage. But what about when you're the one who done somebody wrong? What about when it's you and you're the one? You're in the wrong and you need mercy. And you don't even know if that person has the ability to give mercy. This is Jacob. He needs Esau's mercy. What he did was absolutely wrong. He deceived his brother. He took his birthright and his blessing, and he did it by deception. What is he going to expect? Then Jacob's wives and children come before, and they bow. And Esau begins to run towards Jacob. Esau is barreling toward him. The hunter is coming at him full speed. And Jacob can't run. His hip is out of joint. This must be probably one of the most frightening moments of Jacob's life, because he has no idea what Esau is going to do when he meets him. He is coming at him full force. But suddenly, as he gets close, his arms open wide and he embraces his brother, falls on his neck and weeps. Can you imagine, Jacob? Can you imagine the cortisol in his system? Can you imagine the fight or flight? But he can't do either, and he's there. And now an embrace. And they weep together. Then Jacob has to press Esau into accepting his gift of all the livestock. Esau volunteers to accompany Jacob into the land, but Jacob obviously did not want to chance upsetting or offending his brother again. You know, like, good, we got peace now. This is good. How about if we just, well, you know, I'll go a little slow. You go ahead. If someone said, see her later, you go to see her, I'll go to Shechem and we'll see her later. No doubt the fear came after this encounter. The fear often operates this way. We can be brave and calm, even filled with faith in the moment. Then when it is over, we think, I never, ever want to go through something like that again. And we kind of have a fear of the very thing that God just brought us through. We never want to repeat that. This is when fear grips us and begins to attach itself to our thoughts. Lord, I know you're going to bring me through, but I just don't even want to go through something like this again. But Jacob also picked up hostility and enemies. Not only is Laban hostile to Jacob, but there is a boundary that is set up just right at the base of the mountains of Gilead that say, Jacob, not allowed. No crossing back for Jacob.
In Proverbs 16, it says, if our ways please the Lord, he will make our enemies to be at peace with us. We receive power and peace from God when we yield to him. God's long-expected meeting with Esau was a marvelous event. God so turned Esau's heart that he was eager to be reconciled with his brother. Earlier, Esau had cared nothing for his birthright, and he cared little for old grudges now. God was faithful and touched Esau's heart. We hope you have been blessed by today's Bible study. For more information about the Gracious Words radio program and the teaching ministry of Cheryl Broderson, please visit our website at graciouswords.com. Coming up next time on the Gracious Words program, we'll look further at Jacob's return to Bethel as we continue our series, Our Great Creator, in the book of Genesis with Cheryl Broderson. We do hope you make plans to join us. Again, for more information, please visit our website at graciouswords.com. This program is sponsored by Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.